Good evening, everyone. This is Tala with Drive Through Therapy. Thank you guys so much for joining me tonight on another episode. And as always, I'm grateful for your support. I am just so thankful for October, and I love the fall, and I love the costumes that come from Halloween, and all the wonderful fun of the smell of apple cider and pumpkin patches and corn mazes, and I love that. I love the whole thing. You get the feeling? That's that feeling. Yeah, the fall feeling. So I'm glad to jump in there to do this episode. It's been kind of a very challenging time for me. And I had a really amazing supervisor before, and he would tell me, you know, whenever you are feeling down, pull in someone and help them. And I think that's good advice. And tonight, I hope this helps you as I hope it helps me. And I'm here to serve. So let's get started. Self-pity is what I perceive as a coping mechanism. And many of us have it. It is a natural human feeling or a response. However, this is one of those emotional responses that turns dark pretty quickly. It isolates you. It singles you out and makes you, unfortunately, comparable to others, which eventually ends up being that I'm inferior, that I don't deserve, that I'm not enough. And I will try to prove that consistently when things become stressful. I will go ahead and give you the definition of self-pity so you'd know. It is from Wikipedia. It's the one I found the most, useful. Self-pity is an emotion in which one feels self-centered sorrow and pity toward the self regarding one's own internal and external experiences of suffering. Self-pity has been defined as an emotion directed towards others with the goal of attracting attention, empathy, or help. Now, self-pity usually arises in times of stress or challenges, or when the person perceives that something happened that is out of their control. Anything. It could be taken in a way where it becomes exaggerated in one's mind as kind of the end of the world feeling. Because the individual that experiences self-pity perceives that there is something out of their control when it comes to an external circumstance, most of the time it'll result in blaming others. It'll result in blaming oneself. It'll result in isolation from others, feelings of loneliness, because in fact, we are saying that nobody loves me, basically, right? I'm the only one in the world that this always happens to. These are types of statements that people who demonstrate self-pity say. Now, like I said, self-pity is in every one of us. Absolutely. It just depends on how it's expressed. It is a very useful feeling. I don't want to say it's just there for no reason. Your body and your mind doesn't have anything in it that doesn't provide some sort of reason, some sort of adaptive reason. So why do we need self-pity, and what is it for? Well, I think if we engage in self-pity, it is usually a way to nurture one's self. It's an attempt to nurture oneself, right? To show compassion and empathy towards oneself. But it goes darker than that, because it leaves the person debilitated. It almost stabs their self-esteem and tells them on the inside that they're not worthy enough, they're not good enough. There's an element of a person experiencing a sense of envy, which results, of course, in more self-pity. I don't have what they have. I never will have what another person has. And those are the words that can sometimes be expressed in those cases. Now, I want to make sure that at this point, I do say that although it has somewhat of a function, self-pity is the darker version of self-compassion. It is the most extreme debilitating version of self-compassion. Self-compassion is a lot of a healthier response that says, I care about myself, I care about the world around me, but I also take ownership of my feelings. I don't want to necessarily make anyone or anything, any entity, any institution, any person, any external factor responsible for my responses and how I feel. I am not helpless to my feelings. Self-compassion really implies a more proactive interaction with one's sadness when something does not come out the way they want or expect. Self-compassion is more adaptive and healthy. Self-pity is debilitating. It is isolating. It might attract the wrong attention as well as not provide any solution to anything in one's life. When I feel self-pity, it's a helplessness. It can take me to the darkest corners of myself and make me withdraw from being present in my life, being enjoyed, as well as enjoying others. That's what self-pity does. Unfortunately, self-pity also denies the person who is experiencing or demonstrating self-pity an ability to self-reflect. Usually, individuals who experience self-pity as a way of coping consistently have difficulty with self-reflection and will usually end up blaming their difficult situation on external factors, such as bad luck or how other people are being unfair to them. So again, the major point I want to make is that self-pity takes away one's power. They become a puppet to the situation around them. So they have difficulty changing themselves because they don't allow for self-reflection or self-criticism in a healthy way. And accountability, of course, and responsibility, which is the main ingredient to help us move forward and become more developed in all areas, whether it's mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We need the self-reflective factor here. And self-pity keeps us from looking at our life accurately and honestly. When it comes to self-transformation, I want to point out that the 12-step programs are actually built on the idea of addressing self-pity in order for people to stay sober. So basically, self-pity and addressing that helps people stay sober for life. It even saves their lives, is one way to say it. It is such an integral part of those programs that allows us to see how important it is as a life and death situation. That's how important and detrimental self-pity is in addressing. When people, addicts and alcoholics, don't address self-pity in those programs, then unfortunately, it is a life and death situation and they could relapse because they will use all these different justifications that come from self-pity, because again, they're only focused on their own suffering and there's nothing else coming from that. They just kind of sit and wallow in it, is the best way to say that. And from that, it becomes a reason to drink or use. So it is a life and death situation in those cases. That's why it's handled seriously in 12-step programs. But I want to take the same idea. I want to take this genius idea of handling self-pity as a way to treat depression, as a way to treat anxiety, because those two specific emotional states and disorders are all inside the mind. They start there and they end there. And so I'd have to consider self-pity as a consistent, less identified criteria in the DSM for those disorders. It is integral as well when we're talking about anxiety and depression. people who experience self-pity as a form of coping, the way they handle problems and situations that don't come out as expected, usually end up experiencing significant fluctuations in their emotions, which results in significant fluctuations in their responses. And it becomes extreme. So self-pity does not provide us the accurate estimation of our problem. It doesn't. It just makes us focus on our own feelings of injustice and sadness, and we isolate and withdraw from people, and then we start acting out to some extent to get help and to get love and nurture from another, but it just becomes destructive. It does the opposite. It doesn't do anything good for this person. It actually destroys relationships for them. Self-pity is also correlated quite strongly with anxious attachment styles. People that usually have difficulty with fear of abandonment and codependent responses, they are usually emotionally and physically could be clingy and have difficulty with emotional independence. I want to make sure that self-pity is presented to you guys in a way where I have really no big judgment about people that demonstrate self-pity, but rather I want to provide it or present it in a way where you're not going to find it attractive to use and to show its true dark nature, its true destructive nature in one's life. It is a temporary way to provide self-nurturing that could cause a long-term destructive lifestyle, decision-making, and poor bonding in relationships. Now, how do we move and heal past self-pity? Well, I think it takes years in the making to where we learn to use self-pity as a coping mechanism. This at one point becomes normalized in the psyche. So you got to think about an upbringing, perhaps, because it's going to start there somewhere, where this child had to deal with emotions by internalizing them. And the way that they self-nurtured was through self-pity. And in their self-pity, it became a protection, a form of protection that they use. Because if you think about it, when I get into my own world, internalizing problems, saying that people are out to get me perhaps, or that people have been unkind or unfair to me. And as a child, I have no real healthy way of expressing that emotion. I would think that at that point, internalizing the problem and making these narratives that make me appear attacked by the world or make me appear that I am somehow less than, these narratives, although they sound destructive at the time where I'm sitting there internalizing these problems and these injustices in my life towards me, I am kind of self-nurturing that way. I'm validating myself in that way as a way to feel better. So I don't think this starts off as a maladaptive response. To be honest, I think this starts off as a way to protect ourselves from the world, from hurt, from pain. And it's a coping, just like any other coping that we may have. In this case, though, it is an unhealthy one. Because while it may have helped me early on to nurture myself in those very deep, dark moments where I couldn't express it, and I didn't know what to do with them, later on, this internalization, being in my own internal world, repeating or ruminating the terribleness of the external factors that are ruining my life, and either it's the people, the institutions, the places that are ruining my life, now it's not accurate. Now it really doesn't need to be repeat it, because we need ourselves as human beings, as adults, to take more accountability for how we feel so we can get relief. If I feel like I cannot control my own relief, and that externally, the relief must be controlled or mended or persuaded, whatever the case is, or whatever I have to do on the outside to control it, then I'm only going to get worse, because life is not going to give me what I want every time. And I'm going to get disappointed, and it becomes a cycle. I'm going to go back into my self-pity. Nothing gets done. Nothing gets resolved. So I'm going to go back out to try to control stuff to just solidify it and get the outcome I want. But then I'm going to get disappointed because the world is not going to behave the way I want it to behave. Then I'm going to retreat within, and then I'm just going to experience this destructive self-pity. And sometimes during those self-pity, we might even relieve ourselves and justify it to drink or use or, I don't know, do extreme behaviors, at which point in those extreme times, I just lose balance and I lose touch with reality. Self-pity is an important thing to address. And I always tell you this, guys, I'm in every episode. There's not one episode I send out that I'm not in. Every episode I see myself in it. And a lot of times I'm talking to myself first. So we all have this ability to internalize, to withdraw, and to adapt in the way of self-pity. But I want to challenge everyone to self-reflect, to gain their power back emotionally, and to accept that I cannot control the outside world. I cannot control people. I cannot control many external factors. And that is okay. And that is okay. It is a fact of life. It's a fact of life. And accepting this, even though it's a very difficult thing for humans to accept, accepting the unknown, accepting that I don't have control over my world, is a very big jump for us emotionally, mentally, spiritually, but it's also a big upgrade for us. Our stress decreases, our anxiety decreases, our depressive symptoms decrease, and more importantly, our need to control becomes less and less, and then your good, amazing feelings get more and more and more. Because we cannot control anything beyond our responses. That's the truth. That really is it. And so self-pity thrives on the idea on relieving myself of accountability towards my emotion. And I just sit there and I blame others for them. And I blame other situations. Like, it thrives consistently on that. And it is tempting, friends, to get that temporary relief in that moment. However, it debilitates us for the long term in building things that we don't easily destroy when we get into our self-pity. You know, it's really a destructive thing. I can think of so many situations of meeting people that I've worked with in the past that have described their parents when they become depressed and how they deal with emotions. They just kind of go inside the room and they lock themselves in and they just disappear. And so the kid is left kind of fending for themselves at home because mom or dad is just kind of in the room feeling sorry for themselves because they can't control something, whatever that is, whether it's their marriage or, I don't know, their decisions, whatever the case is, whatever they kind of sat in there ruminating over, they left that kid outside taking care of themselves. And so, unfortunately, that kid would also more than likely react or respond based on an emotional reasoning that because I feel this way, I'm just going to act on the feeling, even if it's destructive. If I feel it, it must be real, so I just got to act on it. But our feelings are not accurate. There are feelings, that is valid, but they're not always accurate. So for example, if I'm offended at someone, it doesn't mean they actually offended me. It could be my insecurities, my biases playing parts in that, in how I view them. I'm the one looking at my life, interpreting my life. I got to start taking responsibility of how I'm interpreting my life. So when we grow up in a situation where we also see parents that react strongly to their emotions in a way where it becomes destructive, this gets normalized in our psyche. So if you have this type of background, you need to check to see if you have this coping within you, because it might be there and it might be worth a look to resolve this. Self-compassion is the key here. It is okay to feel sadness towards the self. It is okay to feel that, you know, I lost my job today and it's really darn sad. And I feel like this was an unfair situation. It's okay to feel those things. But what we don't want is to cross the line of the narrative that it's the end of the world and this always happens to me and the world is out to get me. And this kind of sets the momentum of more negative thoughts, which ends up becoming cyclical. You're just going to drown in them, in that reality, that internal reality, rather than accepting situations as they are and learning to make decisions in the moment based on what reality you're actually experiencing. So at that point, it's okay to engage in self-compassion. I need you to take care of yourself. I need you to give yourself what you need in that moment, whether it's love, nurture, connection with another, but also accept with humility what happened. We don't want to create chaos because of it. We want to make sure that when things happen that are out of our control and they may be undesired, that we don't burn the house down. We just want to make sure we don't do that. Because when you wake up out of it, you'll see that there was so much damage that we could have prevented. So much damage that could have been resolved in a healthy way. So I challenge everyone to find self-compassion and not cross the line to self-pity. I hope this provided you something to think about when it comes to that. And again, we all have it different levels, but I want everybody to know that it is the one of the most destructive emotional states and thinking patterns. And it'll take you down. It does not discriminate. And I want more for you. I want more for me. I want us to live our life with a little bit more control, but the control, it is not on people, external factors. It is within myself. Controlling my responses, controlling which thoughts and which feelings I actually play out and respond to. That's all the control I got. Everything else, I'm just going to have to accept reality as it's being presented to me. And that is healthy. And finally, we want to talk about what we really want to add to make sure that we are healing this need for self-pity. And because self-pity is a habitual thinking process that's been reinforced in your psyche for many, many years, meaning that you've been selecting to reinforce the beliefs that result in self-pity, whether I'm not lovable, I'm inferior, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy. It's kind of like we've been supporting this belief consistently by events that happen around us. We're the one looking at them and interpreting them that way. Something as simple as, let's say my coworker gets a promotion, but I don't. I will kind of fall into my self-pity at this point and just say, here you go. That's why you're not good enough. This person is better than you. They can do the work better or speak up better or whatever superficial way we're going to compare ourselves to another, but all to reinforce again those beliefs I have on the inside. That's what your brain likes to do. It likes to support beliefs it has on the inside just to prove some sort of mastery over its world. It'll do this with any subconscious belief. It doesn't care if it is a good one, a toxic one. It will just keep supporting this belief. Now, the power we have over our awareness when it comes to those thoughts is everything. That's what change demands here. It demands for us to be consciously aware of those beliefs and make sure that we are reinforcing on purpose new beliefs. Now, you are probably wondering, what new beliefs should we be reinforcing? Well, I want everybody to start doing an accurate inventory of love. Of love. We have not survived this long without the help from another. However, we perceive love comes, or we have an expectation at least, that love should come in a certain way, in those gestures that are just really grand and very particular, and almost everybody could agree, oh yeah, that's love, right? Like a bouquet of roses, somebody giving us money or some kind of jewelry, whatever. Like those are the big gestures that we could say, oh yeah, that person loves you, right? But we actually receive love every day. We're just not trained to look at it. And what I mean by that is we have to do an inventory of what in fact is happening in front of us and how much help we're getting throughout the day. You know, we pretend sometimes that we live in a mass shooting every day. We pretend that we live in an experience, an armed robbery every day, or the disappointment and sadness of losing a job, or a heartbreak from a breakup. We pretend that this is our everyday life, that life sucks because we experience those things here and there. But that's not what we experience every day. Every day, we are out in the community and I'm standing in line at the cash register and waiting for my turn, and somebody lets me go in front of them because I have less products than they do. And they're very kind and generous to do that. When I'm at lunch and I order something to go, and that day I get a little extra in my to-go box, I'm being loved in that moment. I've currently been moving into a new office space for the practice, and I'm by myself doing that for the majority of it, and I got help with the big stuff, but you know, for the majority of it, I just had to do it by myself. And you have no idea how many people came to assist me, and it's just for me, for them to kind of take the big stuff and help me with them all the way to the room that's my office. I was so grateful, so grateful. And I accepted their help and I appreciate it. I'm being loved all the time, all the time. The universe, from people, from God, from whatever you believe in, you are being loved all the time as well. We just have to learn to see it with a much more expanded definition than the narrow definition we've been looking at love to be. We sometimes attribute love coming from a specific person doing a specific action. But what if love is bigger, larger than life, larger than anything we could define, but it is everywhere and all the time. When you send your children to school, when I send my child to school, the teacher that is making sure that he is finishing his food, and the teacher that makes sure that to remind every kid to go to the bathroom before they have an accident. Now that's the stuff that is made of love. That's love. And in this case, I'm being loved. You're loving what comes from me. So you're loving me too. We take care of one another. I want you to remember that you can't do it all by yourself, and you haven't been doing it by yourself. There's been people around you that have been sending you the message that you are loved and you are lovable and valuable because you are human. Your humanity makes you valuable. And it's important. And you are important because of that. So there is no need to prove anything else, to prove it this way or that way. The truth is, you are valuable as you are. And our job today is just to receive the love that's coming at us all day long, all day long. When I go to the grocery store and there goes my favorite snack and it's available, I'm just like, wow, the universe is just loves me. It loves me. It loves me all day long. And today I got to speak its language of abundance. I can't just remain stuck in hyper-focusing my idea of love to specific expectations. It'll make me feel like I'm in poverty rather than abundant. And I want us today to feel the abundance of love that's everywhere with us. All the time, all the time. When your kiddo asks you for your attention, there you go. That's, instead of being annoyed by it, I want you to say, yes, I will accept that love and just kind of just swim in it. Just swim in that attention from your child. There's a beauty to that all around us, but we have to habitually start focusing on seeing it. And if we do, if we actually do that work, I doubt you'll ever need self-pity as a way of coping, because you'll realize that you're loved all the time and you lack nothing. Sometimes outcomes happen that are undesired, but it doesn't mean that it's out to attack you. It doesn't mean that you deserve this or that you're an inferior individual. That's why you're getting this outcome. A lot of times we're just going to see it as for the highest good, even if it's undesired. So I challenge you to do this inventory all the time, all day long, all day long, to see the world as a resource, to see people as a resource rather than something to be afraid of or paranoid about, something to project your insecurities on. You are being loved and you are given love. People are trying to help you in so many ways. And we just need to expand the way we see it. When you drop something on the ground, more than likely somebody's going to help you to pick it up. That's love. That's the love that we naturally have towards one another in humanity. Yet we dismiss it every day. We think nothing of it. We're entitled and we perceive it to be an entitlement of just, or call it courtesy. However, it is love. It is love. When I am driving in a parking lot, and a busy parking lot, and somebody allows me to go first when it was their turn, what a kind gesture that they make. That's love. That's love. I want us to really work on giving credit all day long to the people around us that show us love. I need us to start looking at life and people this way. If we don't, then we're just going to be tormented by the perception of self-pity that comes with self-pity, I mean. It's just a perception that will grow like a fungus and progressively get worse for us. I want us to heal this for a lifetime. And while you're healing this, you're going to get and start to see that you are wealthy, you are rich, full of love and abundant, rather than living in poverty and lack. I hope you can creatively come up with more ways that you're being loved. I don't want you to think it's an accident anymore. I don't want you to think it's a courtesy that people have towards one another. I want you to really give it the credit it deserves. We need to start seeing that in one another, that there's already love out there. You're not starting from scratch. You don't have to only expect it in one way. It is all around you. It is all around you. When I wake up in the morning, I go and I make my coffee, and it's one of my favorite things to do in the morning. And then I can get ready. I'm grateful that I have coffee and I'm grateful that I have clean water. I'm being loved when I have gas in my car so I can take my son to school as well as end up going to work so I can provide. I have the ability to provide. Man, oh man, am I being loved? Am I being loved? I can't guarantee you that I'll have a car with gas 2 years from now, but I'm so feeling the love that I have it today. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm going to have it. I'm going to have some gas in my car. And it's the definition of love to me today. I don't need to look too far, too hard. It's right in front of me with the way my family is being taken care of and that I'm able to provide for them. Again, it's not all me. It's not all me. I work with people and those people pay a fee and that fee puts food on my table. Again, I'm being loved all the time. All the time. Yeah, I just want you to just accept it. Accept the love. Start looking at your life accurately. Those things are no accidents. They're not just there. I have a sense of comfort in my home. Because I have light and heat when I need it or cool when I need it. I have the ability to buy my son clothes and shoes for his school. And I have the ability to take him for a haircut. And not only that, I'm not doing it by myself. I have other people that help me with haircuts. Meaning that if I go to a barber shop or a salon, they let me know because they can see it on my face. Like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. They can let me know, hey, this is a level one. This is a level two. I need and help educate me about what a haircut is. And that's wonderful for a single mom like me who's raising a son. You know, I can't do it all by myself. I love that I get help everywhere. Not help, but love. Let's just call it what it is. That's what it feels like when I get that kind of response back. This kind of, I mean, best way to say it, love back. People might think, oh, this person's his job. Their job is to help you. But that's not how I see it. You don't have to do that. But the people that have, man, oh man, I see it now. I see it now. I see it all day. I see it all day and I want to keep seeing it and adding onto it the creative language of love and understanding how it plays out all day long because I just want to become more and more of an expert on that area because it makes me happier and it makes me live a more fulfilled life when I'm surrounded by love rather than when I'm surrounded by pessimism and stoicism and, you know, I don't know, entitlement. I don't know, but I've already lived that and I don't like it. I've worked in places like prison, jail that could make a person jaded because you get to see and hear what people do to people that's unspeakable at times and the worst thing that a person can do to another person. And I still believe that we can be loved, even in those dark places, especially in those dark places, there's love. And although it's a little more difficult to see, it's there. It's everywhere. It really is. All right. Thank you guys so much for joining me tonight. I love you guys. I love each and every one of you. I truly do. I hope this finds you well and lets you know that you are worthy and that you are enough and you are born that way. You don't gotta do anything extra for that. I'm sending you love and light. Maya Angelou says, self-pity in its early stage is as snug as a feather mattress. Only when it hardens does it become uncomfortable. This has been an episode of Drive Through.